are listening to the Fundamentalist Podcast.
Until the light takes us, am I right, Bog?
Oui.
Hello, one and all. Welcome into the Fundamentalist Podcast. I'm your host, Dual Guest. And on this very, very special Albums of the Year 2022 edition, I'm joined, per usual, by the lovely duo of Richard Donahue. We are going to be giving you the very best, the highly curated, heavily picked over, not redundant at all, our favorite albums of the year 2022, plus some honorable mentions. We'll also throw in some of our favorite EPs in there, just because we're all about giving the good recommendations here. With that being said, gentlemen, welcome to the show, and let's dive right fucking into it. Now,
yeah!
I was trying to remember last year, if I was smart, I would just gone back and listen to the episode, but faking up viewing numbers and all. I couldn't remember who went first last year, and I think last year we actually did the everyone gave their top 10s at once, as opposed to us all going the roundtable function. Maybe that was backwards, but this year we're going to do the roundtable format, where instead of each individual giving their 1 through 10 plus their honorable mentions, we'll all start off with our honorable mentions and then go through one by one. So that way we have a little bit more of a discussion feel about it. And as always, if you'd like to participate, send us your top 10 lists to thefundamentalistpodcast@gmail.com, to the Instagram page or the Facebook. Or if you're like most people, you just want to shit on our list, we will accept that too. It's half the fun here after all. Peter, get us started with your honorable mentions. Let's go.
Alrighty.
Honorable mentions of EPs. Let's go EPs, then honorable mentions for albums, and then get into the event, the albums of the year. Should we say?
I actually enjoy this record a lot. Actually, it's the first record I've released to since Chaos and Form. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed it a lot. I actually got to see them as well on this tour for the album with Christian in Boston. And these new songs are fucking great live. And I was just kind of awestruck, because last I saw them was years ago with Shitface, a little kind of a blur. But seeing David Davidson live is just out of this fucking world, dude. He's
the reincarnation of Dave Mustaine without the Alex Jones and religious nut beliefs.
Those came later in Mustaine's defense.
That's a lot of drugs early days. But yeah, watching him play guitar, he just effortlessly runs up and down that fretboard. It's really fun.
His guitar is really cool too. I want to shout out, I don't know whatever that model of Jackson is that he plays, but it's always like a through body version of it, where the neck and the body are made out of one piece. It's just a really sexy piece of heavy metal hardware.
Absolutely.
Yes. Definitely a solid record. I did enjoy it a lot. So,
Richard.
All right. So for our favorite EPs this year, coming at number 5 is Tormentor Tyrant. It's members of Corpsest and Salathus, two Finnish death metal bands I enjoy a lot. It's essentially a tribute to like old Deicide and Morbid Angel. Like, if you like old Deicide, this is right up your alley. I enjoy the shit out of it. It's nothing original at all, but if that's your thing, I'd highly recommend it. My favorite track would be All Seeing Eye. Coming in at number 4, I have an album we discussed in the previous episode, Moonlight Sorcery, Piercing Through the Frozen Eternity, which is fucking fantastic power black metal. Empowered black metal. And it is a fantastic song. Wolven Hour is probably my favorite track off the record as well.
It might be my favorite track of the year, honestly. It's up there, top three.
Top 5, easily. And all right, coming at number 3, it would be the newest Archgoat EP, clean edit. Coming at number 3, Archgoat's All Christianity Ends, which is one of my favorite tracks off the previous record, though this is 4 tracks of original songs in the vein of their earlier releases. My favorite song being Crown Cloaked with Death, which also sounds like a thrash riff in the middle, which is very odd for Archgoat. So I really dug that. Almost, I would say, progressive of them in some sort of way. Coming at number 2, I have the Gossadar Malignant Altar Split. I've been excited for this for probably the past 10 months, especially Gossadar, a fantastic newer Russian death metal that I'm a big fan of. And unfortunately, this is the last music for the time being we get with Malignant Altar, because they broke up due to some health issues with a band member. But my favorite side would be the Gossadar side of the split, and that track would be Domination of Irreality. It just it fits that sweet spot of a incantation with the heaviness and like the slowness, but not going straight to death thing with those like just atmospheric keyboard, the background that's just chef's kiss perfection. And last but certainly not least, my favorite EP, which will come as a surprise to nobody, is Worms Blue Nothing. Phil Togus of Atramentis and Cathelis has joined them on guitar and has taken their already next level to an even higher level. His guitar playing is fucking perfect. I highly recommend to everybody. My favorite track would be the title track, Blue Nothing, 12 minutes of sheer sonic perfection.
My top EPs of the year are very black metal focused, shocker. So I'm going to start off with one that's already been mentioned, and that's Moonlight Sorcery's Piercing Through the Frozen Eternity. A fine example of empowered black metal. Some of the finest examples of empowered black metal, I would say. Great shit. I had only heard of this band for the first time when Richard mentioned them because of his friend Paul. Thanks, Richard's friend Paul. You truly gave me a fantastic release to listen to. And they just dropped a new EP, Nightwind, The Conqueror from the Stars, but I didn't have time to really critically listen to it. So I'm sure it's really fucking good unless they're just like ultimate one and done. I'll be checking that out. You probably should too. I'm sure it's pretty fucking good. The next entry is Erzfeind's Mushbilly. They put out three EPs this year, but this is probably my favorite. You heard me talk about it a little bit on the top black metal releases of 2022. And if you didn't, you should fucking listen to that episode because it was fun to record. Atmospheric, really, really, really evil, dismal, really vain opening music, if you will, at times. Big, big fan. Listen to it while taking a bath. It's called self-care.
up the river, not across.
Speaking of suicide,
tragic.
The remaining members of Power Trip have a new band, and it's called Fugitive. Anyway, the EP is called Maniac, and it's really fucking cool. It's more neo-thrash, just like in the vein of Power Trip, but I think the vocals are a lot better, and I think they're a little more focused on extended thrash passages, a la some really 80s-influenced thrash, as opposed to the more crossover thrash that was evident when it comes to Power Trip. I think the band has a bright future. Fugitive's Maniac. Secondly, second best EP of the year is Geistlich, coming to us from Germany. Their EP, Hidden in the Mists. It's more atmospheric black metal, but more along the lines of Panopticon, very in tuned with nature and, I don't know, it's like type of music you listen to when you're on top of the mountain, just gazing at the valley below. Really, really fucking cool. My type of shit, if you've listened to the podcast before. Finally, my favorite EP of the year, somewhat controversially because I wasn't sure if it was going to be my favorite. Maybe I shouldn't even categorize it as my favorite because fucking Geistlich is really cool.
Say it.
Anyway, Holders, the Eternal Fanfare, I think maybe has a lot to do because this band kind of scratches my Darkened Nocturne Slaughter Cult itch while I wait for a new Darkened Nocturne Slaughter Cult album. They really do share a lot of similarities, but medieval influence, so there's some like, you know, really Renfair elements, I guess you could say, on this. But if it's got to exist, I'd much rather it exist in this form as opposed to like Heilung or Wardruna. Like, I'm tired of that style of pagan black metal. Give me some pagan black metal with some balls.
It's not really black metal. Like, Wardruna's more just Viking music, and Heilung's like kind of a tribal thing too. It's not really much metal in any of that. Wardruna more so Heilung, but yeah.
I 100% agree, but you know how many people are trying to pigeonhole them? Usually just horny dudes. Holders, the Eternal Fanfare. Check it out.
We got nothing for that one, Duel. Yeah, coming in dry on that horny dudes comment.
That'll about do it for our favorite EPs of the year.
I'm going to shout out Nether Heaven from Revocation as my honorable mention to my top 10 albums of the year. Really solid record. You got to love some Revocation. Pretty much technical thrash metal, about as technical as it can really get. I would say that this record had a noticeable core influence too. There was a lot of breakdowns, and so it was quite varied in that way, which you could look at it in the past and say that, you know, maybe one of the detractions of any band that, you know, goes to this level of technicality is, you know, everything kind of blurs together at a certain repetitive BPM. Overall, it was a really great listen. I think you can, you know, like I said, because it's varied enough, you can pop it on and listen to it front to back fairly easily. So that's why you should go check it out.
Also, a lot more Satan, more black metal influence on this record, too, with like songs like Re-Crucified. They also had a guest appearance from our boy, Trevor Strands, RIP, and Corpse Grinder.
Corpse Grinder.
No. I believe also on that Re-Crucified song is what it was. But one thing I will say, spoiler alert, this is also one of my honorable mentions for the albums of the year, is that we've discussed on this podcast previously the curse of consistency. And even though they do a good job of trying to be as varied as possible, introducing new elements, the black metal, the thematic elements are different, something that hasn't been explored heavily in Revocation before. A little bit same-ish. I'll go ahead and hit you all with my honorable mentions when it comes to the top albums of the year. Revocation's Nether Heaven, Storm Ruler's Sacred Rites, and Black Metal. This is one of the late cuts from the list, and I'll tell you why it got cut from the list. Because the song, the album is like 18 or 19 tracks in over an hour, and some
fucking
of it
huge.
Probably could be trimmed. Even if it was like a 12 or a 13 song album, which is still beefy as fuck for an album today, I think the record could be more focused. And while don't get me wrong, none of it is like bad or skippable. Well, not necessarily not skippable, but skip worthy. It runs long and some of the parts start to kind of run together a little bit. And it makes some of the things that should hit hard seem less impactful when it kind of comes back around again in two songs. And then again, two songs later, part of it's really cool, but it kind of overstays its welcome just a little bit. And I'm sorry to say that.
Panache, like that much.
And instead of overstaying my welcome with a lengthy honorable mentions list, I only had two this year. So both of you fuck yourselves.
Wow.
Thinking you know me. Richard, give us your honorable mentions for
all right. Two. I have the long man here of honorable mentions. So let's get through this. All right. My first honorable mention this of 2022 is the new Voivod record, Synchro Anarchy. It's probably my least favorite of the past three sort of comeback-ish records. Because they did three prior, that was the material they with Piggy was still alive. This is with their new guitarist Chewy. It has kind of a sleepy vibe to it, which I would mind in like a stoner doom sense, but this is Voivod, so it's more high energy. The tracks Mind Clock and Holographic Thinking are a bit too long than necessary, and the track listing, there's some issues. The last two songs, in my opinion, should have been swapped. Memory Failure should have been the next to last track, and Quest for Nothing the last track. That being said, I still really enjoyed it. Huge fan of Voivod. It's still high quality shit. Next is the album I discussed on our top album, our top midway albums of the year, Desolate Shrines, Fires of a Dying World. Still really enjoyed this record, though two of my favorite songs change from The Silent God to The Silent God, Cast to Walk the Star of Sorrow, and the final bleak as fuck track, The Furnace of Hope. So if you're into blackened death doom, I would highly recommend it. Coming up next is Innumerable Forms, the album Philosophical Collapse. They're a death doom band from Boston, actually, on Profound Lore Records. Members of Power Trip are actually in this band and Genocide Pact. And I gotta say, the guitar work is fucking sublime. It's haunting. It really stays with you after you listen to the record. And if you're interested, like in really diving into the genre, I would say this is, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, like the kiddie pool of Death Doom records, in the sense that the album's under 40 minutes, the longest song's 5 minutes long. And it excels at all the strengths of the genre. My favorite tracks off the record would be Built on Rot, Lifeless Harvest, and the excellent final track, Sleeping in Light. Let's see. The next album, Mother of Graves, which actually I think was on the Decibel Top 40 this year. The name of the record is Where the Shadows Adorn. This is death doom in the vein of Catatonia's Brave Murder Day or the first two October Tide records. And it was mixed and mastered by Lord Dan of House Swano. So needless to say, it sounds fucking immaculate. Another great one. My favorite tracks would be the songs Rain, The Emptiness of Eyes, and the final track, The Caligneous Voice.
Brady.
Yeah, very, very much so. I have three more that we'll be done with this. another record I did mention, so this will be brief, Trenchant's Commando Cult. It's a side project of Nick Norris and Jeff Tandy of Imprecation. Very World War One themed war metal. So very much black and death metal, but I'd say for the genre, very catchy. And actually the title track, Commando Occult, features a solo by Rob Vigna of Immolation, which is really cool. And of course, he fucking kills it. Actually,
How different from like 1914 would you call this World War One themed band?
There's no cinematic shit. It's just straight fucking riffs. So
okay.
Pile driving forward. Actually, I got to meet Rob Vigna very briefly at Maryland Death Fest. I was wearing the shirt. He's like, hey, he was like, hey man, that's a good album. I was like, yeah, no, thanks, man.
What about Cannon and Fever, another World War One themed band?
Cannon Fever, they can get a little avant-garde. This is definitely not avant-garde or fancy, or it's a little melodic in parts, but again, just very straightforward, catchy for a war metal type theme, which a lot of the shit is just straight blasting noise. Anyway, but that's the thing, more power to you. It's not quite mine all the time, but still a great record. Next, 16's Into Dust, which is by far the catchiest, melodic, and most rocking record they've ever put out, which doesn't surprise me, especially hearing the song they put out before this record release, but I really enjoyed it, and it has probably the most experimental song I ever wrote. It's called Born on a Barstool. It starts off like this jazzy intro, like female vocals, and it kicks in this like rockin' sludge. It goes back to the jazz. Like it's like they're almost like, I think this is probably their eighth or ninth record. They're almost like having a rebirth now that Chris Giroux's now in the band. They're just in a completely different direction, but it's working. It's not like they're like, you know, softening up their sound to be no more mainstream. So it's really cool. Other favorite songs would be Scrape the Rocks and a Never Paid Back, which sounds like a cut straight off Down NOLA. So highly recommend that. And finally, Assumptions at Hadean Times, another pick from my friend Paul. Death Doom, Funeral Doom stuff, more Death Doom, but has honestly a very cinematic flow to the record. Like it flows really well into each other. And the guitar playing is fucking smooth as shit. My favorite song would be the final track, Black Trees Waving.
So without further ado, dear listener, we're finally here to give you our roundtable discussion of the top 10 albums of 2022. Like every year, much hand-wringing. A lot of thought was put into this. I think we constantly talk about how much active listening we have to do for the podcast. And you think about how much of your actual Spotify Wrapped reflects just background noise, and it's almost zero.
I know.
Without further ado, the top albums of 2022. Richard, give us your number 10.
Number 10, we have Immolation, Acts of God. Not quite the career highlight that 2017's Atonement was. Still very enjoyable. They kind of went back to more of the groovy sound of 2002's Unholy Cult, which I'm a big fan of. Deserves more respect, in my humble opinion. My favorite tracks would be Noose of Thorns, Immoral Stain, and the final track, Apostle.
So is it better or worse than Majesty and Decay, the true ghost of Immolation albums?
First of all, you're wrong on that. And B, yes, it is better than Majesty and Decay, 100%.
Bogrovich, give us your number 10.
All right, coming in at number 10, I have The Agony and Ecstasy of Watain. This is a lot of fun, man. This is just fist pumping black metal. I think one of the reasons why this album stuck around on my playlist is because it's very like, trim. You know, I think it's one of the things that I really like about. I know that I've been known to say that sometimes things can get a long winded, and up the list, I have a few more pretentious offerings that I definitely have doted upon. But there's also nothing wrong with just like a fun, solid fucking record. And again, one of the caveats I always say every year is that this is my list. I'm not necessarily saying this is better than anything else. This does reflect based on what has stuck around in my listening, and this album definitely has. And so unfortunately it had to bump Nether Heaven at the end of the day, because I definitely spent way more time listening to it. Goofy title aside, I still absolutely love the single. The Howling Black Cunt is phenomenal. We've talked about this in past episodes, so I don't really need to wax on it. And for my own reputation, it might be good for me to side shuffle away from this declaration at this point. But I think maybe only three songs out of 13 are longer than 5 minutes. So it's digestible. And once again, it's got a noticeable kind of punk rock and roll influence to it there. That's kind of your thing. It's what you've come to know from Watain and, you know, Curse of Consistency. This one outperformed other bands who also have that label, in my opinion.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that they kind of trimmed the fat, so to speak, when it came to this record. That seems to be the order of the day in some black metal, whether there's going to be some entries on my list that I'm going to say the exact same thing about. And another really noteworthy mainstream band, I'm not sure they're going to get mentioned again on the list, so I'm mentioning it now, is Behemoth's Opus Contra Novum, or whatever the fuck that album is. Also very, very similar, just 3-4 minute songs after very long experimental, i.e. self-indulgent releases previously. So maybe the bands are starting to learn, or maybe that's just how they evolved in 2022. The self-censure a little bit. So number 10 on my list is also a black metal band. It is Neckelwind's Cannawild Black. Now, I won't spend too much time talking about it because I already talked about it on the top black metal albums of 2022, but I think they are a much more energetic, much more driving and direct black metal influenced Agaloc. And I think they kind of pick up some of the same American folk metal, the torch that Agaloc kind of left behind, so to speak.
Keyword.
Excuse me?
That's a keyword, some, not all, some.
Some. Okay, the torch has been passed, sir. The torch has been passed. Get over it. Your boys are dead.
I know. Don't remind me. I never got to see them live. That bums me out. I actually saw them supposed to be once in New Orleans, and their van broke down in Texas. And they came back, and yeah, no one showed up apparently.
So just light a campfire and let your olfactory senses just conjure up whatever the fuck Agaloc means to you.
So much.
What is Agaloc but the campfires we've had along the way? Number nine, since I started last. Number nine, I have Anti-Inferno's Anti-Diluvian Dreamscapes, another album that was featured on the top black metal releases of 2022. Just absolutely beautiful music. Black metal, more so than most other metal genres, has the penchant for beauty and is able to pull it off with relative ease, especially in the more atmospheric subgenre. And this album really does it beautifully. Everything from its art style to the way they construct their songs, very tension and release. But instead of it being like an explosion of brutality and violence, like a lot of black metal does, it's just another gorgeous soundscape that really takes you to another place mentally, especially if you're eyes closed, headphones in. It's one of those records just made for it. Absolutely brilliant. Anti-Inferno's Anti-Diluvian Dreamscapes. Bach?
All right, coming in at number nine, I have Immutable from Meshuggah. So sort of a complete 180 from the Agony and Ecstasy of Watain. I would say that this is one of the more intimidating listens that I have on my list, and that you really have to put your ear to the ground and try and suss out all the different nuances and the droney riffing that they have in this. I have said in the past that I'm a big Meshuggah fan, and I don't want to walk away from that, but I've met some much bigger Meshuggah fans, like people that are fucking crazy about this group.
Yes,
I think that they're really great. And I love the fact that they are such influencers, and it's always a very curious thing to take a look at what a band is doing sort of in spite of the genre gent that they more or less birthed and still have reigned atop of for the entirety of its existence. And in some ways, I would say that this is, again, you know, as bands kind of tend to do as they get older and older, maybe one of the more accessible Meshuggah listens, even though I said it's still kind of intimidating. I've talked about this in past episodes, but lighting the short fuse, you know, is a little bit of a gasp for air. But I love the Abysmal Eye, and I don't think it's, you know, we only get one of these once every 6 or 7 years. And so it's worth not glossing over and appreciating it while we have it, because it could be a long while before we see another Meshuggah record.
And also, Frederick Thornhall, sorry, he's actually finally back in the bags. He took like a couple of years off, because when I saw New Orleans, I think you got a show, Duel, he wasn't there. They had Per Nils of Scar Symmetry fill it in for him for that, the touring and shit.
Yeah, they had the unfortunate task of following the Black Dahlia murder. And unless you're like super into like Meshuggah, it's really tough to follow high energy mellow death with Meshuggah.
Hey, I got to hear Future Breed Machine finally. That was really fucking cool. So, but yeah, Black Dahlia is far more entertaining. R.I.P. Trevor.
R.I.P. Trevor.
Coming at number nine, a band that was on my EP, Best EPs of 2020, Cryptwar. This is their full-length record, Spewing Mephitic Putridity. And this is just honestly disgusting, brutal, simple, catchy death metal. I would say sort of in the vein of Demi Lich vocally wise, like the primitive like Nuclear Frog vocals, but just dumbed down, but really catchy songwriting.
So werewolves, but less cool.
I would say more cool because I prefer the spin to werewolves. But anyways, continuing on, I think this whole record is great. Just if you're some simple, brutal, catchy, this and they have a death metal, this has you covered. My favorite tracks on the record would be Disgorge Chunks of Life, Septic Phlegm Asphyxia, and the track Amorphous Transmutations.
Septic Phlegm Asphyxia is pretty cool. That'd go down. Good title. Good job, guys.
It's eight songs. It's like 35 minutes. Like you can listen to spin it multiple times. It's a great listen. If you're into like just lowbrow, brutal death metal, check this shit out.
You know, you call it lowbrow, but how many people, if you just showed them the album, that's the album tracks on the side of the street, could even pronounce these songs, let alone play them? Let's give some credit where credit is due.
Also, cool album artwork, though I could see it. Pretty badass album artwork as well. So
nice. All right, let's move on to number eight, Donahue.
I just did nine. Oh, okay. Coming in at number eight, we have Sumerland, who also has members of Power Trip in it as well, and the album Dream Killer through Relapse Records. And the description I heard this record, my buddy Evan told me, was it's like depressed docking. And listen to this record, I can actually kind of see it.
That's like the most outrageous description for something that I've ever heard. Depressed docking.
It's like quite a juxtaposition of words too. Dokken does not scream depressed.
No, not at all. I love Dokken.
Maybe it's like middle aged Dokken, you know, when they realize their girls will never be as hot, the fame will never be the same. You still gotta strut out in like those leather fucking chaps.
But
this is what life has come to.
All jokes aside, though, this is some really great traditional metal that is very much influenced by that glam scene, but has kind of this melancholic vibe to it. But the whole record, it's one of the catchiest records of the year. It's not the catchiest record of the year, which is coming up next, but I highly recommend this record. My favorite tracks are the opening track, Twilight Points the Way, the title track Dream Killer, and the fantastic The Savior's Lie.
Excellent. My number eight is another album, shocker, that we talked about before. It's like I like black metal or something. Altars at the Gates of Dusk. It's fucking incredible. Check this band out. A true awesome up-and-comer in the world of black metal and atmospheric black metal. And one of the only cool things to come out of Russia since, I can't remember. Bog.
All right. Duel, you mentioned it before, but my number eight is Opus Contra Natrum from Behemoth. So I definitely wrote this off as predictably going to be a piece of shit when we heard some of the singles.
I think we both did.
And I got to admit, the reason that this one made it on here is because it was a fucking surprise. The songs Disinheritance and Once Upon a Pale Horse alone kept it into my rotation. There are some really bizarre compositions, which I guess are indicative of, you call it, the more self-indulgent period of Behemoth's catalog going back. And so I do kind of like the digestibility of it, but they haven't forsaken themselves overall. I just think that there's actually some good songwriting on this. There really is.
The Deathless Sun is a huge standout for me. I love that track. It's very, very much like Bartzabel from the previous album. There's some definite, like, real production value going into the track, but it's still really cool. Very, very black metal. And Upon a Pale Horse, as you already mentioned, surprisingly heavy. Just gets in, gets out, slaps you in the face, and leaves. It's like a real Christ Grinding Avenue throwback.
One of the things that I think is cool about this record, too, is it is kind of one of the best modern case studies for, I want to say, you know, produced and advertised heavy metal. So it had like a really cool video that was shot with like 90% drone footage for a lot of the singles that's on YouTube. Y'all should definitely go check that out. I mean, it's worth seeing, with lots of fire and, you know, Nergal, you know, you could see him play pretty much every guitar he has inside of his closet, I'm sure, in that thing.
I think it's like on top of the Polish building museum, culture or whatever the fuck, Museum of Culture.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of cool. And so I think it's kind of, I guess, exciting to see that a band, I mean, I guess you have to put out 10 albums before you can get, you know, a label's attention to throw a little dough at you to do something like this, but
it's in the contract.
Yeah, it's exciting to me to see that, you know, a band like Behemoth, you know, at one point they were, you know, barred from playing their own music within their own country because of satanic themes, now can go ahead and do something like have a high production video on top of the cultural institution. So, you know, it's cool. I think maybe there was some sort of extra stuff like that that got me a little bit more excited about Behemoth. But hey, that's advertising and marketing doing its job. So go check out Opus Contra Nachtrum.
Is that not the greatest fuck you in the world, that you go from being sued by the government for like blasphemy and shit to the government begrudgingly having to accept that, while we fucking hate you, other people outside of Poland like you, so therefore we have to like smile through our teeth at you and let you do shit like this?
I think it's fantastic. I love that.
It's kind of like the Norwegian black metal bands. They all started out as just like criminal teenagers burning cultural landmarks, and now they're like considered a cultural export for Norway. Imagine Necro Butcher being like, yeah, this guy's one of our most famous Norwegians. And you just cut to the interview. Yeah. Who are they? Fuck them.
Speaking of that, I love that Metal Headbanger's Journey, the extended Norwegian. It's like a 30-minute aside. But he talks to us like, yeah, like all these people, you know, birth churches were fucking stupid because those are all pagan churches. They converted to Christian churches and you torched them to the fucking ground.
I'm 17 years old. They weren't really thinking, bro.
Which ones? Fuck them. What? Fuck you.
The greatest. Whenever I can buy a fucking MIDI sound pad, you best believe that that will be one of the samples forever on deck for this podcast.
Well, what's great was the follow-up review like a couple years later. He's like, yeah, sorry about that. I was really hammered. Like, oh, no shit.
No kidding.
Couldn't tell. You handled it really well, bro. You handled your booze. You want a beer? Have a few. We'll start talking.
Oh, sorry. Control.
Bog, let's keep us going. Hit us with your number seven.
All right, number seven, I have All That Was Promised from Hath. So I don't know if any of you guys actually got around to listening to this record, but
it's sort of
newer contribution. For me, I don't know anything about this band except for this record, and I got to admit, I popped it on. I can't remember how I found it, to be honest. I may have been served it through the algorithm. And you know, up to the fourth track, Lithopediac, I believe that's how you pronounce it, but I remember at that point I was like, this is pretty sick. And then that one came on and I was like, oh my God, like there's really something to this. So I think that it's a lot of fun because there are certainly a lot of, you can call it progressive traditional death metal out there, but it's a little bit of a, you know, thin line to walk if you want it to be really, really easy to listen to and exciting. And, you know, this album got me really excited. And so that's why it's here. It's got some fun album art. I really like I really like some of the curious song titles, namely Name Them Yet Build No Monument. The final track I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know what a lithopediac is. Do you guys know? But
no idea.
Anyways, I hope that at least one of you had a chance to listen to this. I know I asked a couple of times because I was doting on it.
I did. I dug it. I thought it was a little overproduced for my taste personally, but I did dig it though. It was a top 10 in my opinion, but I did enjoy it a lot though for what it was.
Wait a second. It would appear that lithopediac is much like the Somberlain. It's a made-up word.
Well, damn.
Because I Googled it, and the only Google option that comes up, literally the only one, is Hath's All That Was Promised, and then a bunch of suggestions for other words.
Well, it's interesting enough that I guess we're talking about it, so applause to them for putting the front and the back of two other words together and making it sound cool.
Yeah, the closest thing is lithopedian, which is a fetus that's been calcified on the body of the mother cult.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah, so maybe lithopediac is someone who violates said calcified fetus. I don't know.
That's fucking brutal. That's brutal as fuck. God fucking damn.
Yeah, dude, that's holy, holy shit.
Look at this fucking filth you're bringing to the viewers, Bog. I'm about it.
Sinners and degeneracy, that's all I see. You sicken me, people.
I was just going to say, I think to wrap all of that up, I think that this next Hath record could be really fucking incredible. I think that could be the one that's really going to blow this band wide open. Or that's not the right expression.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I've actually seen a couple of shirts of theirs going to shows the past year, actually. So they're picking up some steam. I've seen like two or three people wearing the shirts. So we'll see. Bailey, next big thing.
This next band has no problem with people wearing their shirts. They are fucking everywhere. Coming in at number seven for me is the latest release from Ghosts Impera, a real return to form after the slight disappointment that was Prequel. Pretty much every single song on this album is a monolith of old school, catchy, heavy metal. Whether it's Kaiserian, Spillways, Watchers in the Sky, The Darkness at the Heart of My Love.
Yes.
So many bangers on this record. It's like a combination of Bon Jovi, Motley Crue, and Billy Joel. And I know all the super cult people just threw up four different times at every mention of those bands. But I think it's fantastic. It's a real juxtaposition to the other bands that are on my list. And maybe that's why it hits so hard, because it's not a style that I listen to super often. But when it works, it works. And I think it's one of Ghost's best releases. Probably would rank it third on their albums. I don't know if it's better than Meliora or Opus Eponymous, but it is fantastic and a true earworm. You'll find yourself coming back to it again and again. I know I have.
Yep.
And spoiler alert, I don't think I'm alone. Give us your seven.
Number seven is also Ghost and Pure, which is saying a lot from me, who's been an avid Ghost hater. I have no shame in that. But
fun story. When the first year or so, me and Richard were friends. I showed up to play a show in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and this man was so drunk that before I got out of the car, he was yelling at me about my Ghost love. Hadn't even opened the door, and it was just mid-conversation. How do you listen to that? So, yeah, the ghost has been real with this guy for years.
It is, but I did like Meliora. I still thought it was quite metal, but there's elements there. But this one there is right at my fucking wheelhouse of just glammy type shit, but incredibly catchy, dude. Just, oh, it's the catchiest record of the year. It's literally my number, I think on Last Out FM, like as far as albums, like song, it's just my number one. And as the elitist, it hurts my soul to admit, but I fucking love this record. He pretty much mentioned all the songs, though he didn't mention Griftwood and the 20s. Final track. 20s is all right. I don't hate it. It's not one of my favorites. It's on the bottom of the list to me. But the final track, Respite and the Spit of Field, is fucking brilliant. It was kind of a sleeper song for me. Like, I liked it, but all this together, like, holy fuck, this song, like the transitions and shit. It's great. I fucking love this record. Which, as a Ghost fan, as a Ghost hater for years, it's very weird to say, but goddamn. I thought I lost a lot of cult points, but fuck it. This record's great, dude. Check it out. You're like catchy, melodic, hard rock / fucking metal shit, dude. It'll blow your fucking mind.
When Paradise Is Lost, go straight back to you for number five. Or six, sorry.
Six. All right, coming in at number six. I have a record we discussed. I'll be very brief on our top records of the midway through the year, Sarcasm. I've been a big fan of all their records since they've came back. And this new one's called Stellar Stream Obscured. It's very much in the vein like Dissection and Sacramentum and stuff like that. This is apparently like a concept record about aliens coming to Earth, bringing technology and stuff like that. Kind of sort of the Alex Jones, that lizard person guy, David Icke, that type of shit lyrically, but a really killer, black melodic black death metal. My favorite tracks honestly haven't changed. Ancient Visitors, this epic 8.5 minutes fucking song that's brilliant. Obsidian Eyes and the track Apocalyptic Serenity. But the whole record though is fantastic. If you're into Dissection Sacramento with like more of a sci-fi twist, I can't recommend this record enough to you.
Bogrovich, give us your number six.
All right, number six. This is also a new, new listen that was introduced on the top black metal. But I have Black Braid One from Black Braid. I was really blown away by this group. It's always nice to hear some reinvigoration, slightly core influenced from upstate New York, USBM. I sort of joked and said that a lot of the inclusions of these acoustic tracks on, I'm going to say that this genre typically is just to remind you that you're pagan, as I said previously. But I think these are injected with so much more life and purpose. I'd like to call it the track Sacandaga, and also Prying Open the Jaws of Eternity, the last one, just for having
a great fucking song.
Really, really cool. Not a fantastic song, but also a really cool song title as well. I'm really excited for the future of these guys. I saw them being compared to Panopticon in various places, which I'm not sure is completely apt. Maybe aesthetically it might be sort of in the same ballpark. I think it's, again, anything that's just a little bit folk influence at that point from this country is going to be sort of put in that same category, even though I disagree with it. Huge fan of both bands, not to detract from either one. Really looking forward to Black Parade 2, if that ends up being what it's called. But you should definitely check out Black Parade 1 from the eponymously named Black Parade.
Coming in at number 6 for me, we have the second straight, or at least I have the second straight placement Unity, except this time with Bogrovich. I also have Black Parade 1 at number 6. As he mentioned already, fantastic core influence, black metal. I mentioned previously, they remind me a little bit of myself, at least the one-man guy of how he riffs with some slight metalcore influence that isn't like overt. It's not like Abigail Williams' Legend EP style of metalcore influence, black metal, but it's a little more subtle in how it's incorporated. Plus with the pagan elements and the Native American elements, it has a fairly unique aesthetic to offer to the pagan black metal scene, especially the United States pagan black metal scene. Highly recommend you check that shit out. And as Bog said, I'm really looking forward to seeing what this band can produce in the near future. They have a really fun sound to them. Another band with a really fun sound to them. Honestly, possibly one of the more unique bands in the entire black metal space. So much so that some purist among us would say they're no longer black metal or never were. Zeelan Ardor and their self-titled album is coming in for me at number 5. I just had the ability to see them live for the second time just a few days ago. And man, they fucking hit hard. This record, while not my favorite from them, features some of the heaviest material they've ever written. But it's also features some material that is so experimental that I'm starting to experiment with things I don't necessarily like. Like, there are elements here that you could argue, and I think successfully, that it's essentially just Imagine Dragons with some blast beats and Satan thrown on top of it at times, which kind of sucks. That's that same boom, ah, drum beat that you hear on every fucking TV bumper on a sporting event ever. Those parts don't hit. And the overly new metal influence parts
necessarily hit. It's, sorry to not interrupt you, but y'all are way bigger fans of that band than I am. I've listened to Wrecker a couple of times, and the new metal element is so obvious. Like, it was black metal. Like, where's it at? I see nothing. I see kind of popish songs and then these black metal songs, quote unquote. I'm like, where? Please tell where.
Tracks like Death to the Holy and Gotterdammerung are where it's at. The first half of the album is head scratching at times. And then it gets more black metal, more heavy metal, like the heavy metal that we like anyway, towards the latter end of this record. And that's the only reason it's not a little bit higher up on the list. This album has fluctuated the most of anyone. I've moved it like 3 different times. And I'm not going to lie and say they're not benefiting a little bit from recency bias because they were so fucking good live that I probably bumped them up a spot or two. At one point, this was an honorable mention. It had fallen all the way out, which is weird. Because I was, I guess, hyper fixating on the parts that I didn't like. And I was convincing myself, essentially, that this is the future, man. They're just going to explore more of this bullshit.
They're selling out, man.
It's over. Yeah.
This is jumping off point.
But like with Ghost, you got to give the bands that you like a chance to redeem themselves. Because sometimes they do. They don't always get lost. Mastodon, it's your turn to come back to the light. This last record, man. Come on.
I saw I listed that one, honestly.
Yeah, it's good, but I have not gone back to it the way I have other Mastodon records. And now I openly snub it, like compared to everything else.
Crack the Sky and Prior, essentially perfected. After that, very hit or miss.
I just want to say, go see them play some of those tracks live. Like, I think maybe I'm the only one who's seen them tour any of those ones. They're pretty sick.
No, I believe you. I've only seen Mastodon twice, which is both times on the Crack the Sky tour. So I got both times you had the record in its entirety, and kind of like a great of set after that. And the last song off Leviathan, Joseph Merrick. No, Hearts Alive. The first I saw, they played that song. The last is like 13 minutes. Fucking beautiful, dude. Holy shit. That was an experience, man.
I know you just saw them recently. Mm-hmm. I've only seen them once because I slept through their Psychofest set, but I saw them on Halloween in New Orleans in 2015. So I've heard plenty of post-Crack the Sky material, and I'm with Bog. It hits. The band's just fucking good. I don't understand this post-Crack the Sky Mastodon hate that you have because they've got some fantastic material. They're like fucking Tom Brady, man. They've got two Hall of Fame careers, one with won the first 10 years and won the latter 10 years. They're both fucking winning.
No, there's good songs. I say since Crack the Sky, I've found like a full record I just love. I like this song, that song, that song. But consistently throughout, I haven't found one. I guess that's my biggest gripe. And they're singing.
You come around to Ghost, Richard. We're gonna keep working on Mastodon. All right, you'll okay. get you there eventually.
Yeah,
I guess so.
I'm gonna get Mother Load. You'll get there.
All right. I'm gonna jump in here with my number five. So coming in my fifth album. That's where we're all right. Is five.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. My number five record of this year is "Angels Hung from the Arches of Heaven" from Goatcore. So much in the same way that the agony and ecstasy of Watain is just some good fist pumping black metal that makes you remember why you fucking love the genre, I would say that this is kind of an interesting and tantalizing offering from Goatcore, another band that I think many people wrote off as potentially slated to put out a lot of the same, which not to say that this isn't necessarily, but for me, this one is working a lot more than some of the other ones. I want to call out the tracks, the title track, Angels Hung from the Arches of Heaven.
Yes.
I love Invocation 3 and The Born of Satan's Flesh. So basically the first half of that album is fucking fire. And the rest of the stuff is good, but you know, you get back to the drum bass, black and roll that we've come to know from their previous career.
I will say this. I'm a huge Goatcore. I've seen Goatcore 11 times. I love all the records. I told Olisa, she blew her mind. I was like, this is the first record where I'm just like, eh. Like, it's not bad. Like, and I listened to it once. I listened to it again recently. And I realized they did in my opinion, the perfect balancing act of the extreme black metal elements and the thrash. And then they kind of, there's two tracks that are pretty close to as traditional metal as Goatcore gets. And I think that's why I'm not like balls to the wall with the rest. The rest have been either one side or the other. This one kind of balances all three elements really well. So it's kind of weird for me. It's like, I still do like
it. I will say, as I mentioned, the first half feels maybe a bit different than the second half. I will say it's yes. potentially a little bit disjointed. Starting yes. with that, I think Death from Above track, which kind of goes back to, you know, just
black and roll type
Goatcore. Yeah.
It's funny you said that you thought this was kind of the one that didn't really grab you, that it was just kind of more the same, because that sort of, I don't know, in a rut feeling I kind of got from Constricting Rage of the Merciless. And I think this is a little bit more of a return to form, in part because there is a little bit more experimentation going on here. There's more mid-tempo, which I think Goatcore does really, really well. Songs like
Blood for
the Master, like that sort of tempo. Real, to borrow the phrase, fist pumping, but at a slower tempo. Also,
yeah.
We openly talked about Trevor Strand being one of the best lyricists in metal. No one seems to give Ben Falgu his due.
He's great.
Maybe it's just the fact they do slightly knuckle-dragging black and thrash metal musically that people don't put as much weight into the lyrics, but the man's talented.
He's
very evocative in what he's talking about, too. Just a very often overlooked aspect of Goatcore's music that I think should be given credit.
Highlight. Yeah, no, I agree. He makes, talk about Satan interesting. We'll come much of Immolation, back when they were way into that. Like bashing Christ interesting. I don't like, say, Deicide, for example. It was just, fuck Jesus, you know. Immolation made the shit kind of interesting. You know, a little more thought put into it. It's a good record. I'm not shit a record. It's possibly a great record. Just didn't grab me like the rest. I just kind of prefer Vengeful Ascension, the prior record, personally. But Kurt Ballou, I want to shout out Kurt Ballou, who helped with the production. Fucking phenomenal job. Not a big Converge fan, but I love Kurt Ballou's production work. It's fucking phenomenal. And it sounds great. So,
well, Richard, take it from your co-host here. I'd like to encourage you to go back and give that one at least one more listen. I think you admitted just now you've only heard it twice. So,
I'll give it a listen. No, I dug it. It just didn't make my top 10. It's the first time ever in my Goatcore fan of that it didn't make my top 10. So it's a weird place for me right now. I believe it's my turn, if I'm correct. Number five, yes. So coming in at number five, we have Faceless Burial with the record At the Foothills of Deliration. Their debut record, Speciation, was in my top five of 2020. And apparently for this record, they have been binging the fuck out of Death's Symbolic, because they upped the technicality noticeably so. It was there at Speciation, but it's very much more so on this record here. But they still kept the brutality and the interesting, catchy songwriting. And in a case that very rarely happens, in my opinion, they actually topped their debut record, which I don't find a lot, but they did it here. My favorite tracks on the album would be the opening track, A Mire of Penitence, another record with a big mouthful titled Songs, From the Bastion to the Pit, and the final track, Vaticination. Wow, that's a fucking mouthful. The point is, if you like brutal, catchy, technical death metal, great record. Also on Dark Descent. You notice the theme for now on, so there's a lot of Dark Descent shit going to the number one. So, yeah. Unofficial plug. Coming in at number four, I have Church of Disgust, Weakest is the Flesh. I've been looking forward to this record for at least a solid year since their previous EP, Consume My Slow Putrefaction. And for once, it actually lives up to the hype I gave it. All the songs are great. They're catchy, very, very influenced by the Finnish death metal scene, very noticeable doom elements, but not going straight into death doom while being heavy, catchy songs. The drums are a bit weaker sounding than I would like, but is what it is. My favorite tracks would be the opening track, Arrogant Death, Seemingly Unnatural Infestations, and the title track.
Richard, that's that band from Texas, right? I think the very first time that I met you, you recommended that I listen to them, and I did, and I remember they were pretty cool. I totally forgot about them until you mentioned it just now.
Yes, yeah. No, it's great shit. I recommend it. And the previous records, too, actually. So that's all good shit. Though a lot of it's out of print, though. They're one of those bands that they got a shit ton of EPs and things like that. So I was actually able, one of the records, they were like actually trying to raise money for recording this record. So I bought one of the previous records of vinyl for like $15 a ship. And it's a fucking banger. He has a veneration of filth. It's just nasty, punky fucking death metal. Great shit. Hopefully they play around here next year or two, because I would love to fucking see them live.
All right. So for me, coming in at number four, I have At the Gates of Dusk from Ultar. This is another one that Duel shouted out the last black metal episode and has basically been listening to pretty much nonstop since then. This is a huge record. Like, just the scope of this thing is, it's just like the biggest cave. The ceilings just go on and on and on. There's so many different elements. They really know how to balance what I like to call the old school insane blast beat intensity of, you know, what you get in a little bit more old school black metal with, you know, some hoity-toity kind of pretentious prog elements in here. And I use that in the best possible way that I can, because there are so many bands that do this style well. They are truly masters at it. I haven't heard a record like this in a really long time. So good shout, Duel. I know that, you know, in a yesteryear, there was some joke about whether or not I was listening to Ulta, Ultar, or Ulfa, or Ulthar. I think those are all bands. Is that right? And ever since then, I kind of forgot about them in the jest of that. And I'm glad that I've actually taken the time to go ahead and give them the listening time that they absolutely deserve. As you said, basically one of the coolest things to come out of Russia since the army over the Ukrainian border. Am I right?
So have you just been listening to At the Gates of Dusk, or have you gone back and listened to some of their other stuff too?
I think I listened to the one immediately behind it, which yeah. I think I heard before. It sounded a little bit familiar, but like I said, I mean, this is six tracks, and I think that they're all around 7 minutes, and so I think that this one has largely taken up my attention.
Yeah, you definitely heard some of the earlier stuff before, because with Pantheon 2019, I definitely shoved the Father Dagon and shoved Niggeroff tracks, like the live recording of it, on the thread for like years. Like those black and white shot ones. I think I showed this to you in like my basement in New Orleans for the first time. However many years ago it was, 2-3 years ago. But I'm glad you're finally coming around to them. This band is a bright spot, up and coming in the world of black metal.
This is their third record, is that correct?
Yeah, correct. They have Pantheon 2019 and Kadath, and now this one.
Yes.
My number four for this year, Pestilent Hex, The Ash and Abhorrence. Yet again, more black metal. I've said this before, but it's a true love letter to 90s symphonic black metal. It's very rare, I should say, that someone shows up so late to the party but can have such an impact. Usually you show up and you're just spending all your time trying to get to where everyone else has been, that by the time you get there, the party's already over. But this band just shows up and has dropped one of the best symphonic black metal releases that I can recall in some time. I would say it was just as impactful as Stormkeep's Tales of Other Time last year, which was also a huge favorite of mine. Although this one is a little more European in its focus, I guess you could say. Very much early Dimmu Borgir, 1990s Emperor. Really fucking evil. Really, really great, great production value. This record sounds crisp as fuck. It's like looking at a Rembrandt painting just in sonic form. Highly, highly recommend. If you like your black metal with a little bit of an orchestral and symphonic tinge, this is what you want to be listening to. Pestilent Hex, The Ashen Abhorrence. Check that shit out. Coming in at number three is a much more established band, one of my all-time favorite bands. I've been looking forward to this record for fucking years. It did not disappoint. It was at number one for a little while, but eventually found its way to number three. That's Megadeth's The Sick, The Dying, and The Dead. The riffs are fantastic. Kiko and Dirk, the guitar player and the drummer, bring a really fresh blood to this band riff wise, and with the more aggressive drums, it finally feels like Megadeth has been brought a little bit more into the modern era of thrash, as opposed to just trying to hold on to the 80s and 90s drum sound. It gives it a much rawer edge, more aggression. There's still the typical Dave Mustaine goofiness when it comes to lyric writing, but that's just part that's just part of the Megadeth appeal. It's like his snarl. It's just
his amazing vocals.
Yeah, it's just part of what makes Megadeth who they are. But at the same time, he still knows how to write really cool songs.
100%.
Life on Mars or Mission to Mars is not something that I would have expected the ending, but it's super cool. The Dogs of Chernobyl is super catchy, as is
Love Dogs of Chernobyl, yeah.
as is Life in Hell. And the three singles, Night Stalkers, Will Be Back, and Soldier On are fantastic too. There's not a bad track on this record. Megadeth continues to be the second best 80s thrash band in the modern era. Second only to Testament, in my opinion. I think Megadeth still has the ability to put out quality albums, whereas Anthrax hardly tries anymore. Slayer is now defunct. Not that they didn't try. You can hear our thoughts on that on Under the Knives Slayer Part 1 and 2. And, well, Metallica is whatever the fuck Metallica is doing right now. And
Lux Eterna. It's returned to form, man. Did you hear the internet?
It's a return to like load. It just shows that they either didn't learn or they don't care. Like, all right, we're just going to recycle. We recycled And Justice for All and the Black Album like together two times in a row with Death Magnetic and then whatever the fuck their last record was called.
Hardwired to Self-Destruct.
Yeah, that one. And now it's like, okay, now we can recycle the load shit. You get a piecemeal the nostalgia to you. Now you're just getting the shittier ones. It'll sell all the same. It doesn't matter.
Did you guys see that weird crypto giveaway thing that they were partaking in? I mean, I was like, this is like, seems like such a big scam. Like, I can't even believe it, you know? But it just goes to show these guys are just sitting on their castles in the Bay Area, you know?
From their ivory towers. Their own
farts. Yeah.
From their ivory towers, if we have said.
it does make me wonder. I'm just speculating here how much those guys have invested in the crypto market now that it's taken a huge downfall. They are doing everything that they can to try and bolster that shit back up, you know?
I would say probably very little, but given what we know about Through the Never, that Metallica movie that was a huge money loser, they're not above dumping all their money into a project that just absolutely craters.
Are you talking about that 3D movie?
Yes.
Okay.
It was hyper expensive to make, and they took a huge bath on it from what I saw, so it happens. Credit to them for trying something different. I mean, I actually like that. It's just too bad what the different things they're trying aren't music related. It's more in how they sell themselves. And maybe it's more about legacy and defining their legacy now, because I don't think anybody like our age, 30 and up, is changing their opinion of Metallica anytime soon. If you don't love them now, you never fucking will.
I can remember, this is a thought, like this is probably 2 years ago, about 3 years ago. I was with a buddy of mine back in Mississippi. You know, it takes mushroom shit. We were drunk. We were watching. It was Metallica live at the Coliseum in Rome. And watching them play songs. We watched the whole set. We enjoyed it. It's all right. And then they're playing Kill 'Em All. You know, Kill 'Em All. Seek and Destroy. I'm sorry. Seek and Destroy. And this is the song that kind of got them out there. Like, the song. I'm watching them play the song. And thousands of people, I'm looking like certain songs shouldn't be this big. Like, this sound should not be played this many people. Like, just fucking weird. I don't know, man. They got too big of the britches. I guess that's the point. They're too big of the fucking Bob Rock came in. Hey, sound like Motley Crue, catchy songs. We'll get you that money bags, James and Lars. Yeah. Ugh, fuck Metallica.
I gotta stop those. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's right. Anyway, Megadeth's Sick, the Dying, and the Dead is my number three album of 2022.
Metallica tangent ended.
Donahue.
Three. I have a band I've heard a lot about and discovered this year. Finally listed their records. Aries Kingdom. It was a band started by Chuck Keller, who was the guitarist in the band Order from Chaos, who Gene Pablucchi and Pete Hellkamp, who later started Angel Corpse. He was the half. He started his band called Aries Kingdom. And they Angel Corpse went for more like a very death metal sound, whereas Aries Kingdom went for a combination of, in a death metal framework, black metal, thrash, and traditional metal. It kind of mashed together, but it really works. Certain songs are more black metal. Certain songs are a little more thrashy. Certain songs are more somewhat traditional style. And this is their fifth release. It's a very raw production. At first, it was a bit jarring, but I had a chance to see this band live about a month ago, and they were fucking fantastic. A very criminally short set list, but this record here is on up. I'm not sure it's like their best record of all time, but it's definitely in their top three easily. The my favorite tracks on the record would be The Dragon of Ara, this amazing instrumental called the priest of Palas, and the track A Wolf on the Fold. It's very catchy for extreme metal standard, incredibly fucking catchy. I can't recommend this band enough if you're into either genres I fucking mentioned. Great shit. Don't skip out on this band. If they play your fucking town, go, because they did the cover of Atomic Punks by Van Halen as a closing track. It was fucking phenomenal, dude. Chuck Keller is a fucking shredder that knows melody, which is very hard to fucking find. Is also entertaining simultaneously.
Alrighty, coming in here. Yeah, with my number three, I have the eponymously named record Zeal and Ardor. It's been on Duel's list. And similar to him, I will say that this one really bounced around a lot for me. Going back and listening to it, especially when I'm comparing a lot of these records that I've ranked back to back, I will say that some of the elements that I didn't like about this one stuck out, and at one point it had dropped to the sort of latter half of my list. But I'm really happy to hear you guys say that you acknowledge there's some new metal influence here, because I remember when I first pointed it out on Run, y'all were pretty adamant that it was industrial metal and not new metal.
Well, he was.
Run.
He was, not me. He was.
I don't
get
think
your shit right, sir.
Just to set the record straight, I don't think Run is that new metal. I think the elements come in at other songs, even something like Death to the Holy. And even though that's kind of one of the more blacker songs, it's kind of how they riff, that kind of staccato.
That groove, that like, bouncy.
Yeah,
it's a little bouncy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very bouncy. Like,
if you took out the vocals, you could be convinced you were listening to a Disturbed song every now and then. Just like if you took out the vocals, you could be convinced that this was Imagine Dragons at certain sections. Like, taken out of context, you could poison someone's mind against this band, which is one, a testament to them for how dynamic they are. And that's kind of why they ended up where they did on my list, so high up, because they are so bold and they take so many risks. But not every risk pays off. I don't know if it's the same for you.
What I feel about this record is anybody who's ever listened to the podcast knows that I am a huge fan of Zeal and Ardor. I got to see them last year, and I got to say that they're one of the edgiest stage performances that I've seen in a long ass fucking time. I mean, they show up with the cloaks, they got the singers. Like I said, it's a huge group. It's ferocious. And, you know, with all of the chanting and everything there, I felt like the concept of the band about, you know, sort of American slaves embracing Satan was, when I saw them, was such a crazy take on it. And you know, there are some folks who can't deal with this band because it's not black metal. Richard, you yourself had said you had sort of debated where the black elements are. They are a blackened avant-garde progressive metal band, something like that.
100%. Yeah, I agree with that.
There's no group in the world that does anything even close to what Zeal and Ardor's kind of steak and potatoes offering is. And we see it on here. It's not completely gone. You know, we have Feed the Machine. We have Gotterdammerung. You say it better than I do, Duel.
Gotterdammerung.
Yeah, and Death of the Holy are kind of the most traditional offerings that they have. The ones that detract for me are the track Immersion, which is essentially a synth pop song kind of, you know, stuck in there. And then also the final track, very similarly, A-H-I-L with dashes all in between those letters. Again, I think that what kept this from being number one, I can even forgive them for sort of the nu metal sound, because I think that they're deploying it well in the songs that they're writing. It's not my personal forte. I'd like to see them do a whole album that's a lot more like Tuskegee, which is a track off of their phenomenal Wake of a Nation EP that came out last year. I think that there's filler on this record because they put so much good content on Wake of a Nation, is what I've finally come to accept. I think that, you know, had they just go ahead and reserved that and put it all on this record, then, you know, this would have been the number one record of the year. I think that possibly they stretched themselves a little bit thin creatively, and so they decided to sort of get on that Death Heaven dick and try and get some of that synth pop, you know, fan here.
Yeah! So
I think that, to me, this was a production misstep rather than an artistic one. I still completely love Manuel, and I am really excited to see what they do going forward, as long as Run isn't the model for the band going forward. Overall, I love it. To describe Zeal and Ardor, if you've never heard them and you've never listened to this before, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's academically described as, you know, black enslaved spirituals. So, you know, chain gang chanting, you know, with metal and Satan in there. I mean, it sounds as crazy saying it out loud as interesting as it is on recording. So, you know, I waited a long time for this record to come out, and, you know, it still was a tantalizing offering, for better or for worse. And I think that, having talked about so many bands that are sort of the curse of consistency, there's no consistency here. They brought something different to it, and I have to applaud them for it, which is why they crept their way back up ultimately.
Yeah, you have to give them credit for never resting on their laurels. So every record might be not what you're expecting. I would also add in the songs JMB and Church Burns as real highlights of the record. As you described it, it's pretty perfectly description, like black metal meets like African-American slave spirituals, chain gang, call and response stuff. If there is another gripe I could say is that they've kind of gotten away from that sound, and really only Church Burns and some elements on the other tracks.
Feed the Machine, I would say, is probably the most traditional offering from what they had done for the previous, all of their records, essentially.
Yeah, like I want them to come a little bit closer back to Devil Is Fine as far, and kind of go from there. I think that's like the perfect platform. Like songs like Blood in the River are just amazing. Devil Is Fine hits so hard live. I think Stranger Fruit is their strongest release. I think it's the best of both worlds of Devil Is Fine and then still adding other elements while increasing the black metal quotient. Something like Ship on Fire is like the perfect example. I think that's the best Zeal and Ardor song. Check it out if you haven't done it. But I'm glad that we could at least agree that the riskiness and the bold nature of the band is getting rewarded here. It may not always pay off. Some of their risks don't always work, but they're trying it. And there's a fearlessness in that, I would say.
Yeah.
100%.
So I think it's my turn to go back to back here. I'm going to deliver my number two record. This one, I think that at least one or two of you are probably waiting for, but I have Rashomon. I have Rashomon from Ibaraki. So we've talked about this one a lot. Matt Hafey's black metal project that I believe Ison
black metal, quote unquote.
Well, that's a good point, because this is a fairly progressive record. A lot of horns. I mean, again, if you say Ison, and that's kind of what you go to these days, not necessarily the saxophone as leads, but there's huge orchestral parts that back up. What I'm going to call it's black metal compared to Trivium. Again, you say Matt Hafey and people expect a certain metal core quality that he is still very much giving you on, you know, great records like Where the Dead Men Lay and more recently in The Court of the Dragon.
What the Dead Men Say.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Did you? Okay, cool. Continue, please.
I don't know how you're going to edit that one out. Maybe just cut it out. But
do it.
I had long anticipated this record as soon as Duel said that he was partnering with Ison to create, you know, a side project. And I waffled a lot about whether or not this was, you know, ultimately destined to be the album of the year. Duel, you had joked and said Zeal and Ardor got, you know, sort of drew a bad hand when there was another progressive black metal project to compete against and detract from some of their own creative nature and essence. And I think Rashomon, I believe thematically is a little bit of an introspection into Matt Hafey's Japanese ancestry. Everything that I could find about the name Ibaraki is that it is in fact a place in Japan. And so I have to assume that that's why it's named that. He has some kind of potentially ancestral tie, although I haven't seen him say anything about that. So
His mom's Japanese. His dad is American. I think they met when his dad was stationed over there in the military. All the songs are like, were translated by one of his Japanese friends, so they made sure it was correct. So there's a lot of like Japanese history, Japanese imagery and mythology. The fun thing about this record, it's been in the works since 2012. If you, there's a cool podcast series. It's called like the Ibaraki Files or something like that. It basically, it's like a making of documentary about this record. I highly recommend it. This project's been in the work for like 10 years and it sounded totally different. Matt had said that essentially this album was written and it was just straight up black metal. Like Mayhem and Emperor.
Like he promised.
Does that make you sad, Duel? Like, there's part of me that wishes he had put that out.
So, wait. So, 10
yes
years to work this
yes
record.
And no.
And this is what the result we got. Ugh.
I mean, you say, ugh. I think it's what we got was fantastic.
Yeah, it's, I like it a lot. It's just, I don't know, 10 years? I don't know.
I don't know. This feels like a 10-year record to me. I mean, each one of these tracks, really, you have to unpack it, which I think, in some ways, maybe is its best and worst quality in that it's so thick that, you know, this is, you know, probably, I would say one of the most intimidating releases next to Immutable, like I talked about, and that you really have to go ahead and look at it. You know, I mean, there's great leads and it, you know, Matt does everything that he can to break it up, but he also sort of respects his own artistic effort here by trying to maximize every aspect of this record. And I think it's phenomenal. You know, everything about it is great. I'm a huge fan and I really hope that he's going to tour this act because my God, I would love to see these tracks live.
I would too, actually.
Like, there's so much about this record that you could draw a parallel to the Zeeland Ardor record. Random Mario coin noises, check. Horns,
yes.
Check. Bizarre fucking cameos like Gerard Way of My Chemical Romance that somehow works.
Best song on the record, Ronin, in my humble opinion, at least.
I think it's one of Matt Hafey's finest creative hours, Ronin.
I love Ronin, but Matt, Duel, you had said that, you know, you thought it was kind of, you know, song of the year kind of material. I'll disagree with you that I think that Tamashi no Houkai, which is the one that has the aforementioned inexplicable Mario Nintendo sample at the start of it. I think for me, that's my favorite.
And in the middle, it's also got that little interlude with the keyboard. The bing, the bing.
Again, I you know, haven't studied it, and so maybe there is some kind of tie there, but he's willing to experiment in a fun way, and I think that it works so goddamn well. And I think that, again, maybe this one was caught in developmental hell for a long time. It was totally different than I expected it to be. The same could be said for Zeeland Ardor, and I think that Rashomon came out way more successful than the Zeeland Ardor record.
Because at the end of the day, Richard might laugh at it. It's much more faithful to the source material, which is what we wanted.
Oh no. Rashomon is way more black metal than the Zeeland Ardor record. 100%. I'm with you.
Like,
full sail.
Like, Tamashi no Houkai is my second favorite song on that record, but there's also Kagetsuchi. There's also Akuma, which has got Nergal on there. Another thing that's worth shouting out is that there are three or four different languages song on this record. Some of it's in Japanese, some of it's in English. Nergal's part is entirely in Polish. There's another language on there too that's spoken that I don't know off the top of my head. Isan is featured both in guitar and on vocals. Isan's family do the gang vocals actually in some of the songs. It's a really collaborative effort and it's very unique. It has, as you said, it's kind of Matt Hafey's, he's inextricable from the project and you can definitely hear him in it. Not just vocally, just like all the hallmarks that you would probably expect. But I think that's what works. And maybe it's just because I am such a huge Matt Hafey fanboy. I think it works so well.
100%. Yeah.
But it's a shocker. So spoiler alert. It's also my number two record of the year. I find myself going back to it so fucking often. I don't know. I just wish more black metal was this experimental. You know, and it tends to work. Like, look at Enslaved. Like, Enslaved could have stuck to their guns and they never would have been as recognized as they are now because they actually took risks. Risks work most of the time, you know, if you're a talented fucking musician.
That's actually really interesting, Duel. You said it out loud, I feel like a light bulb just went off above my head, which is, it feels like, you know, for as much as there are the knuckle-dragging traditionalists in black metal rampant probably more than any other subgenre in metal, it also is sort of the biggest canvas for experimentation success, I would say. And look at all of the music that we just talked about for the past hour. I think that's a testament to it. So I applaud everybody who's pushing the boundaries here a little bit, from Black Braid all the way up to Ibaraki.
It is the most malleable of all the subgenres, I think, as far as what you can do with it. Maybe it's just because that's the one I spend the most time in, so I've developed a taste for the non-normative in the subgenre. But I don't feel like you could be as experimental with, I don't know, technical death metal per se, or even thrash metal. Like,
100%. No, I'm with you. No, black metal is the most malleable. I'm also a big black metal fan, so I could say that. But when it comes to other genres, it's a lot harder. When you're experimenting, there's a lot like of a more eye on you. Like, is that going to work? Whereas black metal, so yeah, it works.
Like, even though there is the elitist knuckle draggers who will never accept it, there's enough of the segment of the population that will accept it. And I think that's really all that matters. I want more black metal bands to experiment as hard as bands like Zetlan Ardor or Ibaraki or Black Braid or Nekowindu. I think it's very necessary for the genre to grow, even if some pretentious loser at Spotify starts to call it void gaze or some bullshit like that.
But wait. Are you saying you don't want to hear the millionth fucking Dark Throne under a Funeral Moon clone? What's wrong with you, bro? This shit's banging.
Even Dark Throne doesn't sound like Dark Throne anymore. I mean, if that is.
Oh, no. Yeah, they're like doomy punk. Yeah, they've jumped quite a few hoops of the past. All right, coming in at my number two, we have Imprecations in No Mind Diaboli.
And Nominate Diaboli?
Yeah, in nomine diaboli. Yeah, in nomine diaboli.
In nomine. In nomine diaboli.
In nomine diaboli.
I'll fix it in post.
No! What is it?
Nomine, not nomine, nomine. In nomine, like nominate almost. In nomine.
In nomine diaboli.
Diaboli.
Diaboli. I'm from Mississippi and I grew up fucking up here. My voice was a little fucked up. This is their third comeback record since since 2009, when the first comeback record came out. And in my humble opinion, this is the best record since that period they have put out. All the Imprecation highlights are here. The dripping with satanic atmosphere and fucking evil. The chunky, brutal mid-tempo riffing. And it just, if you're in that style, almost like an early Morbid Angel, but more of a slower speed to it. Now, not say they don't have faster tracks, but this is the best example of that. Unfortunately, the only caveat is, unfortunately, this is the last record that band founder, drummer, and main songwriter Ruben Elizondo contributed to, because unfortunately he passed away from COVID last year. Rest
so
in power,
is it like a whole album of Where the Slime Live type tempo? Because that sounds pretty cool.
It's a mix of both. I'd say there are faster parts. They mix it into there's always a cool mid-tempo part in every section of most of the songs on this album here. So it's really phenomenal stuff. As a longtime fan, finally able to see them live at Maryland Death Fest this year. It was great to see them. And if this is the last studio record they put out, I hope they put out more. But if they choose to go out on this record, this is by far the best record the band has ever put out of their career. And not many fucking bands can say that. My favorite tracks off this record would be Ars Goetia, Thorns of Hate, and Stigmata Wounds. Coming in at number one is the... got this record fairly early in 2022. It just stuck with me as just a prime example of how fantastic and haunting and heavy my beloved genre of death doom can be. And that would be Ataraxes, The Last Mirror, also of Dark Descent, like Imprecation and Faceless Burial. Fan tracks would be Decline, Under the Cypress Shadow, and the final track, A Mirror Reflects Our Fate. If you're into Death Doom in any fucking level, I cannot recommend this band enough. They do all of it fucking right. And I actually can happily say I own their entire discography on CD form now, which I'm very happy to say. So, bless you, Duel. What is your number one, sir?
I kind of foreshadowed it a bit on the black metal episode. Common theme here, but it's Alphas, All That Has Never Been True. One of the only bands that is higher on my love list here recently than even Altar. Bog mentioned previously that they all kind of ran in the sequence, Altar, yeah, with Bog. I told him to check out all three around the same time. But there's a reason for that. They're fantastic. They do black metal in a really different way. It's like a bullet train straight to hell with more atmosphere. Seriously, check out just the first track of this record, Dispel. And if you're not on board, you probably won't be.
It's got a cool album cover too, right? With all the masks, right?
Yes. Really, they do black metal in a very experimental way as well. Not quite as experimental as something like Ibaraki or Zeeland Ardor, but it's still not as traditionally defined as you would expect some DSBM to be. It very much has a perspective, and you're not going to find many bands that sound like it. I'm struggling to think of one. And secondly, the vocals, I use this word every single time I describe them as ghastly. And that's because there's no better way to describe it. It's perfect for this style of music. Perfect. Both triumphant and music to open up a vein to. Amazing. Alphas, All That Has Never Been True is your best album of 2022, according to yours truly, Duel Guess.
All right, well, that leaves me. Anybody notice a glaring omission from my list?
Or tell me, say it.
A Kingdom and Crown from Machine Head.
Please don't say, oh, God.
All right, guys, only slightly more shocking than that. My number one record of the year is Impera from Ghost. And you know what? At the end of the day, I went back and forth between this and Ibaraki Rashomon as to which one it was going to be. And at the end of the day, I said the only thing preventing me from actually putting Impera at the number one slot was my fear of backlash from the community. So at this point, I got to say, Richard, you had said that you were really into 20s. I want to come out and say I think that 20s is maybe the metal track of the year, if you could want to call it. You know, it's a little stylistically worshipy. I said it's very Master of Puppets-esque. But hey, it takes a fucking Swede to go ahead and write potent criticisms of the American government. And multiple times we see that. Grabbing them by the hoo-haws, talking about the Ivy League in that track. I remember, Duel, you said that only Americans are ignorant of the rest of the world. The rest of the world is not ignorant of the United States. And also Griftwood, even though, you know, it's very much a Bon Jovi-esque song. I mean, it's about Mike Pence and how he calls his wife mother and just like how weird that is. This is a performance and an art statement. It's not a metal record. I think it actually kind of transcends it in some ways, which was a reason to necessarily knock it lower, and that maybe the metal isn't the forefront, and that this is a performance, a rock opera. But that's kind of what Ghost is about. And if you want to get on board with that, then you're going to love this. And if you don't, then you're probably not going to appreciate anything that they do. I think that potency has been a little bit absent from everything else that I've heard this year, and I can't overlook it because I think that we need more metal artists applying that same scrutiny to current events and incorporating it into their music in some way. You know, it really is kind of does music take primacy or do the lyrics take primacy? And I think that I've been in a different position in when I was younger to say that it's really all about the riffs, it's all about the drumming, you know, and I'll read the lyrics later, but a lot of the time I can't understand what they're saying. I feel differently these days.
I would struggle to say that lyrics took primacy on this track when they rhymed moolah and hoo-ha. That being said, they did have a nice point of view. I think that line you were talking about, the Ivy League, is like these
Ivy League dokes, they want to mock us.
Yeah, exactly. But I also think this song is more about, like, you know, obviously the Roaring Twenties and some of the speculation that led to the Great Depression, if I'm reading it correctly. It does have that kind of almost like
big Great Wall Street style. Collapse.
Yeah, like very big band kind of vibe to it at times.
It's hokey, but yeah. It's so funny because, again, I think that the line, well, moolah and hoo-ha, I mean, it's so hokey, right? I mean, it's like I'm almost cringing at saying it out loud. And yet I think that some of the baby talk in some ways is his projection of the way that these Americans were actually running their government and the economy into the ground, right? It's so potent. Like, if you want it, it's there. And I still am kind of in awe of it. I I think that the brilliance of 20s can't be overstated, personally. And when I first heard it, I was like, what the fuck is this? But you know what? In pretty much any genre, any music that I've ever listened to, if I hate it at first, I'm shocked. I usually come around to thinking it's the best thing ever. And that's exactly what happened with not only this record, but that track in particular. So there you go. Impera by Ghost.
There you have it, dear listener. The top 10 albums plus honorable mention and EPs of the year 2022 presented to you by your loyal Fundamentalist podcast panel. Gentlemen, it's been a long year. Plenty of really terrible things have happened. The death of Trevor Strand, the reunion of certain bands we won't even mention. It's been despicable. But throughout it all, we've at least had each other. We've recorded some good metal, had a lot of great Under the Knife episodes. And I'm glad to have concluded another year with you dudes as podcast panelists and friends. And thank you from the bottom of my heart. Love you guys.
100%. Same way.
Thanks, Duel. It's always a pleasure. With that, it's a privilege to be on this podcast.
Now you've gone too far.
One solid tear streaming down my face.
With that being said, that's going to do it for us here at the Fundamentalist Podcast for the year 2022. We hope you've enjoyed the year-end extravaganza of the best black metal records, the best live shows, and most shocking news of 2022, and now the capstone, the albums of the year. We look forward to talking to you all again in the year 2023. Before we leave, our dear listeners, guys, what's one thing you hope for in the world of heavy metal? What's your New Year's resolution, so to speak? Or what should the genre's New Year's resolution be in 2023?
Personally, one thing I want to work on 2023 is I've dug a little more to the underground this past 6 months. I kind of would dig more into that shit personally and find those sacred gems, those gems that, you know, are unbeknownst to most people, and bring them to the light, no matter the genre.
There are 10 dudes on the metal meme subreddit that fucking swear by this band. I need to find that one.
Yeah, basically.
So underground, I can't even research whether or not their sus lyrics are actually Nazi.
But, yeah, well, you know, I give a fuck about that. But I want some killer shit, and I want to dig more to the rest. I have never once said any type of anti-Jewish sentiment, so go fuck yourself on that. But yeah, that's my thing. I want to dive more into the underground and find more shit. Well, I guess, fuck it. I'll give Mastodon a second chance. That post-crack Sam Mastodon. I liked Impera, fuck it. So I'll do both sides of the coin. So
for me, like, remember 2 years ago, or last year it was, I said I wanted to listen to more death metal, and I accomplished that. This year, I wanted to listen to more black metal, and I definitely fucking did.
100%.
So now, for this coming year, 2023, I think I want to listen to more doom metal. I found myself, I have some real big loves in the genre, but when I was listening like a top 10 doom bands with a friend of mine, we were talking about doom, I realized it was kind of a struggle to name 10 that I genuinely loved.
I thought just doom specifically, or like death doom, or feel like just doom metal, like vanilla death doom metal, vanilla
just like doom in general. Like doom is the second most valuable subgenre behind black metal, in my opinion. That's kind of why I want to explore it.
Like Yob, Paul Bearer, stuff like that.
Like, if it has doom in it, it is eligible. Okay, okay. So everything from fucking Crypt Sermon to Hooded Menace to Electric Wizard to Black Sabbath is all fair game here.
I got your six, brother. Just let me know.
Thank you, sir. I'll probably lean on you, considering what a worshiper of the subgenre that you are. Bogdanovich, right. Give us your New Year's resolution for 2023. Metal related.
Put me on the spot here. I haven't really thought about this too much.
I know. I kept this one in the back pocket for that reason, off the cuff. Spontaneity.
I think every year I always say that I want to record some music. I've been saying that for a few years now, but I have like a whole album worth of material for Bog Mummy that I still think is fucking good.
This is the year, brother.
Maybe, yeah. Because that's what I need to be doing. I just bought a house that needs a lot of work, and I'm going to go ahead and try and moonlight my black and thrash metal project. So that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, you have to permeate the walls of your newfound domain with the evil riffs, stylings of Bog Mummy. It's the only way you can really make it your own. You have to dominate your surroundings, sir.
Right. It's the only way to get the spirits out, I suppose. You know, I guess if we're all doing kind of introspective, you know, where we need to do a little bit more listening, you know, I really don't listen. You know, I just doted on Ghost, you know, and the other day I listened to that Queensryche record, Operation Mindcrime, right?
Yeah.
Maybe I need to go back and, you know, I've also said, like, I've never listened to any power metal. Like, I've kind of openly hated on, what is it, Enforcer a little bit. So
Enforcer's good. They're not great. Amazing. They're good.
Yeah, good. So maybe that's where I need to do a little bit more exploring, because clearly I'm missing out on some material according to y'all. So maybe I got to hit a little bit more hair and a little bit more the brighter side of the genre.
I still can't believe you fucking said that.
Real talk, Ambush from Sweden. All three of their records are fucking fantastic. I love all the. Can't recommend that band enough.
I had a minute where I was listening to Unleash the Archers this year as well. So I don't know. Yes, maybe I'm primed for it, dude. Maybe this is the moment.
I said something to the effect of, if you didn't like Twilight of the Gods from Blind Guardian, then you don't like power metal. Maybe it's a bit hyperbolic to say, but I know you've checked that out, have you not? Blind Guardian. They just put out a new record this year, too.
Yeah, I didn't hear it. No, I'm not too familiar with Blind Guardian, so.
All the Matt Barlow, Iced Earth, minus that comeback record. The comeback is fucking ass. Don't listen to that shit. It's fucking cancer. All the classic 90s, early 2000s, Iced Earth. Fucking excellent.
There might be an Iced Earth member who makes our top news stories of 2022.
Oh, no, 2006 bullshit. I'm sick of hearing about that. I know it happened. I still love Iced Earth before that. God damn it.
I was supposed to be there, but my truck broke down, okay?
He had his bear mace. He just had it just in case. You never know. Shit might pop on. The man still has good riffs and good songs, all right?
What were you saying, Buck?
I don't even fucking remember. Although I will say, I don't know if you all watch that trendy TV show Wednesday right now. The best line out of that thing is, she's like, I have bear mace, the medieval kind.
Yeah, I've watched it. I have thoughts.
It was a bad ending. It was great up until like episode 6.
Now that we've established our New Year's resolutions for 2023, what is one album that you are most looking forward to in 2023? Whether it's confirmed to come out or not.
But you mentioned one thing. I have something to say about it. If no one wants to touch it, that's fine. Most disappointing records of 2022. I have one. Definitely. I fucking have one. That record is going to motherfucking be. Shut the fuck up. Clean out all this. Out.
It's interesting that you say most disappointing album, because previously I'd been talking mad shit about the new Behemoth record, Opus Contra Nocturum, and that ended up being pretty fucking good. So I don't really have a most disappointing one. If an album disappoints me, I don't spend enough time listening to it, because there's so much else to fucking listen to and there's so much else to get to. I can't just focus on an album. It's like, God, listen to what a piece of shit this is. One thing I was actually surprised, I just want to mention while Richard is looking through his stuff, this will stay in the show, that new Candlebass record is actually pretty fucking cool.
That's what I've heard, actually.
I gave it one all the way through, and then I went back and listened to the ones that stood out to me again. I mean, I think that, you know, after wow, that was a lift, wasn't it, doing that two-part Under the Knife? I feel like maybe we should do them a little justice and try and give it like an abridged recap or something like that with the modern panel. But
I'll be down for that, because I've already heard a Candlemass song here and there, so I actually would be okay with doing a revised version. So
I think they have 16 records. I mean, we just, that one went on and on and on. I agree. I think that it's very much in the vein of all the records they put out last time. Sonically, it's really similar to that last one that they put out with Lundqvist, their original vocalist. Curse of consistency, I suppose. I mean, they've been kind of doing the same thing ever since. It's kind of all been the same since Rob Lowe left.
He wouldn't learn the lyrics of the previous vocalist, Marco, because he refused to learn them. Matter of respect for being a dickhead, but God, there's certain levels like, dude, take it back. The fans like it. You're in the fucking band. Learn the fucking song, bro. Come on, man.
We need a grinding doom band called Rob Lowe's Notepad. I'll play guitars.
Okay. It took me a minute and I found it. Yeah, we're keeping all shit in. But this young band, I found them about a year and a half ago. Again, my friend Paul, Tribal Gaze. Their EP, A Godless Voyage, was fucking awesome. Brutal death metal, a little technical, a little bit of atmospheric, and a little bit of everything I like about death metal.
Are you allowed to refer to that community in such a way, Tribal Gaze?
I don't even get your joke, but I'm going to continue on like I didn't hear that. But they put out a full length. They came out of the blue. Like, I had no idea. Like, Decibel's like, you know, the new Trump Gates record, The Nine Choirs, is coming out. Like, cool. I heard the single, saw the video. Not bad. I heard the record, and it's all that cool kind of atmosphere technical shit from, like, sort of Immolation-esque shit. They cut all that shit out. Like, let's go for mid-tempo chugga-chugga. Every single fucking song on the goddamn album. Oh, it's, I listened the first time, I tolerated. Second, I fucking, I track seven, I shut it off. Like, this is cancer. What the, you had potential, you shit all of your potential.
This is the type of shit they usually put behind a paywall, ladies and gentlemen. Bonus content.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this make it on the episode? Have we said goodbye yet? Can we just, like, come on.
Well, okay, we cut it now.
No, very last thing. A record you're looking forward to in 2023. You can make it short and sweet if you want. It doesn't even have to be confirmed to be coming out in 2023. What do you want to hit in 2023?
What do I want in 2023?
I want to hear that new Dahlia.
Yeah, that's going to be my number one. It's not announced, but whether it's an album or an EP, I struggle to believe that there was not material being worked on before Trevor's death, considering how consistent that band has been at putting out new material. The longest in between records has been 3 years. So whether it's just an EP worth of material or a full length, especially now that Ryan Knight is back in the band, and who knows what back.
Oh, yes. This is so fucking sick, dude.
Dude, the filthiest guitar duo in the entire genre is like, that's going to be absurd.
Yeah, I
God
can't wait.
Damn, dude.
Black Dahlia Murder and Arsis have been put together. So, yeah, great, great stuff. Oof. All they need is a James Malone cameo.
I think it could happen. I think it could happen. Let's get on the forums, guys.
You know what? I'm going to say my number one record. There's a lot of bands. New Dark Side record. It's been like 5 years since the last record. I love the last one, their debut for Southern Lord. I saw with my son his first metal show. He enjoyed the shit out of them. And yeah, I'd love to hear a new filthy, nasty Dark Side record like the last one. So, and that I'm working on now.
For me, my body is beyond ready for new Electric Wizard. I'm fucking ready. I'm ready for them to hit me with another slab of just crushing doom metal. It'll fit in with my New Year's resolution of wanting to listen to more doom metal. So I might as well listen to more of the band that really got me to fall in love with it outside of Black Sabbath. New Electric Wizard. Use Osborne. Make that shit fucking happen. From your cauldron, the base of the birthplace of heavy metal, Birmingham, England. Please, Bog, take us out of 2022.
I want to thank every single one of you who ever clicked play on one of our episodes. I know sometimes it's been a little rough in the past year, but working our production quality. Thank you for sticking with us. We appreciate each and every single one of you. And also, I want to say that I appreciate doing this because it helps me keep on my own metal listening. I hope that we can provide you a little bit of inspiration. If you ever need some tunes, I know in moments I find myself mining our own Slack channel, just listen to what the guys, the rest of the panel here has to say and what they've been posting up and listening to. Hope we can provide you a little bit of a resource as well. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to my fifth year as a member of the Fundamentalist Podcast going to 2023. I want to give myself a little bit of a golf clap for that achievement itself. Of course, not to overlook Duel's timeless, only original member status here. Maybe we can get Dan to come and join us just for old time's sake. Who the fuck knows?
I'd love that founding member clap. That's a resolution for 2023. We get DBO back for an episode.
Mr. Dante Thorne, or later Dante Pyre when he changed his name, right?
Whatever he identifies at these days, we just want to have him on.
Let's say thank you all for listening. I know we've been a bit inconsistent this year. I'm hoping this year will be a little more consistent. I like to put up my, like I mentioned earlier about that digging more underground, like do even if it's mini-sodes, like 10 minutes or shit, just me finding under a record, kind of putting it out there. I like to do that more this year and, keep the shit coming. Quality, not just content. Quality material coming. Because content is just like, it's content. Quality material coming. I want to give y'all underground great shit that y'all should listen to. Whether, no matter the genre. Black, death, traditional, doom, grindcore, doesn't fucking matter.
And while Richard is dedicated to bringing you new underground content, don't worry. The next episode that will be released is from a very underground band. And that's going to be Under the Knife, Alice in Chains, which you could look forward to hearing in January 2023. With that being said, this has been the Fundamentalist Podcast. For the panel, Richard Donahue, Peter Bogg. See you in 2023.